Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Welcome to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. And today we have Rich. Wow, Rich. He's a father. He was a cop, former Marine, and homeless. And his Lyme journey is pretty incredible. So thank you so, so much for taking the time to join us.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Yeah.
You've had a life.
That's one section of it, yes.
Yeah.
That was just a little highlight. That was just to pique your interest there.
Yeah, my interest is piqued. So tell me, and I obviously we're gonna get into your Lyme journey, but I'm tell me a little bit about Marine, where were you stationed and what did you do?
I was a Marine. I was stationed in Okinawa, Japan for a year, and then MCRD San Diego for the rest of my time, 2.5 years or so, 3 years. And I was an MP and a canine handler, which I then, after a couple years break, I went back into that field in law enforcement and was a civilian police officer for the Department of Defense for another 10 years or so.
Okay. And so was that still in San Diego, or where were you stationed?
Yes, I went up to northern San Diego County, so Camp Pendleton.
Okay, good friend he was training police dogs, but it was more for kind of drug. It was interstate, drug trafficking, and he was a canine officer. Yeah, so he's doing a lot of undercover, but he was stationed in San Diego as well. Well, thank you for your service.
Yes, thank you for your service.
Yeah, I mean, we appreciate people that keeps us safer.
Thank you.
I'm not even sure where to start. Maybe we should tell us kind of your life a little bit before you got Lyme. Like, where you were. I think that's, a lot of part of your homelessness and your addiction was kind of pre-Lyme, correct?
Kind of in the middle towards the end, yes.
Okay. Well, why don't you start where you think we need to know? Your story. So you figure out where we need to start.
Okay. Well, I guess I thought I was a normal person. I thought, I was married, had, with my wife and child from another relationship that I wasn't in my life at that time. And like I said, I'm a cop. I had a personal training company for a bit in between. And then I fought professionally in mixed martial arts for about 8 years. And I was content. I had days of happiness and days of sadness. I would have never thought much more of it. And I got addicted to pain pills, got off that for a little bit, ended up getting divorced, custody battle, got back on the pills, and that really is kind of where everything went downhill. I had to take a break from the day. That point in time, really depressed, PTSD, which my father passed. Excuse me, my father was 7 years old, so really wasted. As I was trying to self-discovery, I realized that my mom was the one who found him. So she was just checked out, absolutely amazing woman, did the absolute best she could, but she didn't have the tools to handle it. She never went to therapy. I'd seen her cry maybe twice when I was an adult and was just a super people pleaser. I was just always trying to take care of everybody. And that's kind of who I became, which is hence why I think I joined the Marine Corps and became a cop, because I just wanted to go around saving everybody. I put my cape on and try to sweep in. Even if you didn't ask me, I got it. And that put me in, just in difficult situations. And so during my addiction, that got worse and worse, to the point where I overdosed with my kids in a motel room. just did, you know, I was stealing from store. And again, being a cop, I knew better. My mom taught me better, but that addiction just grabbed a hold of me, and I felt like it was a need. And my life just revolved around that. And I finally got to rehab after about 10 years of doing those pills, about 3 or 4 years of homelessness, and went to a rehab, came out, thought it was better, then, you know, started doing some other stuff, and just still was having just a real hard time. I was off the Norcos, but then I was taking Robitussin or anything else just to quiet my mind. And that was what I realized. I had so many voices and could haves and should haves and resentments and anger and fear and hatred towards me. I just absolutely hated myself. And that's when I realized that I had an addiction to many other things besides drugs, food, codependency, sex, porn, you know, again, out of fear. And then went to another rehab in New York. Well, went out there, was in a homeless shelter for a couple of weeks. And that's where I assumed that I had gotten it. As I was out there, they put me on Suboxone. So I have no idea when I actually got the Lyme. I just remember the fatigue setting in probably after being about a month there. And just the fatigue was something I'd never seen before. And being in the Marine Corps, there's plenty of times I didn't have much sleep. But this was just enough. I'd be standing there talking to you at 1 in the afternoon and just start nodding off after sleeping 8 or 9 hours that night. And just something seemed off. I'd had hypothyroidism as well. And so I thought maybe that was it. I thought maybe it was a Suboxone. And the doctor, that's when she diagnosed me with the Lyme and put me on antibiotics. And then through that and a bunch of other things caused me, or not didn't cause me, but I decided to finally make some changes. I was probably 305 pounds at the time. My body was just completely broken and just damaged. Arthritis in my shoulder, arthritis in my knee, degenerative disc disorder in my back, scoliosis in my back, and multiple other things. And so that was, I think, you know, where my healing journey really started, you know, because of Lyme. COVID was another one that really pushed my healing journey, you know, even further along. My mom passing away during my quote unquote sobriety, at least from the pills, that pushed as well. And then losing custody of my kids. So it's been an interesting journey. And then the Lyme with everything else, you know, I don't know. When I went in remission, I don't know if I was cured. I don't know what it is. But as I started this healing journey, all the symptoms of all these things just started going away.
That's amazing. So you actually ended up finding a Lyme literate doctor like immediately.
She was amazing. And that was when I first got to this shelter. It was a rehab shelter facility. I was there for 5 months through the VA in New York, Montrose, New York. And the first time I remember sitting with her, it was a Friday night. And I remember it was an hour appointment. It ended up being like 3 hours. It was 6:37 at night. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, doesn't she have someplace to be? What's going on? And she was just talking to me about ticks and Lyme and all this stuff that, you know, and I was interested at first until my back started bothering me. And as I was sitting there, it's like, oh, when's this going to be over? And I never realized I would need that information. And she was going to test me, but didn't. And then, like I said, about a month later, just this fatigue came over me like, no, I, and so I went back and I remember her walking up to me in the hallway and she's like, oh, the results came back. And I'm like, is it cancer? And she's like, no, it's good news. I'm like, oh, well, not really good news. I'm like, she's like, it's Lyme. I'm like, oh, okay.
Is that good news? She was,
yeah, no, definitely not good news.
She felt confident that she could help me on that because she had so much expertise, which she put me on antibiotics for 30 days, pretty strong dose in the morning and in the evening. And then probably like, again, as I did all these other homeopathic and organic methods to heal the rest of the stuff, you know, probably about a month or 2 months later, all my symptoms started going away and the fatigue went away. So that's when I thought the Lyme was in remission, but I still had so many other symptoms, you know, the aches and the pains, the arthritis, and yeah.
And so Okay, so you did the antibiotics for 30 days. What did you experience during that time? Any better, worse?
During that time, I didn't notice anything. Probably worse the first week or two. And then, like I said, it was so confusing because all the symptoms I've looked at you know, from Lyme, I feel like I've had almost all those symptoms for years prior, except for the fatigue, the pains in my joints, the brain fog, the depression, the last year, you know, before I went to rehab and all that stuff, most days I didn't want to live. Most days I would think about dying, but I was too afraid to commit suicide because my dad committed suicide when I was six. So I didn't want to be judged. So I would just think about just driving off the side of the road. But then I would get too much in my head because I'm like, what if I don't die? And what if everybody knows? And just the guilt, the shame, the regrets, the resentments, and spun my head out of control there.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So I'm curious, in regards to where you've gotten the Lyme. I mean, because sometimes what can happen is that a person may have been bitten, like 20, 25 years earlier, and then you have additional stressors that come. Yeah, obviously you have plenty of them.
And he had a few, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I'm glad I almost have as many fingers as you. So sometimes what can happen is that, that just kind of pushes it more into being more, prominent, so it's visible. So it could be that all these aches and pains could have been from Lyme in the past, but then, you hit this tremendous fatigue, could have just kind of, been that extra layer of it just because of all the stressors. I mean, obviously, from what you've done, you've abused your body. I mean, being a police officer, martial art, professional, and marine, all of that is gonna destroy joints like nothing else. So it's hard to blame it on Lyme, but you never know.
Yes, and you're exactly right. I abused my body, and now after I've cleared up everything from my life, to include material things and housing and things of that nature, I'm finally clear-headed to be able to look at my past and dissect things and realize why I went left rather than right and why I did this and why I did that. But I look back and every job that I had since I was, 18, I had to make weight as a cop, a Marine, wrestling college, competing mixed martial arts, even personal training. How I looked was, very important. So that was my way of controlling my body to keep my weight down because I'd always had issues with that. I'd probably been on 500 or 600 different diets. I've tried every single pill, every steroid out there. It was just, again, just a roller coaster. And I was just constantly abusing myself mentally and physically because of just so much anger and hatred towards myself.
And that's an important component in regards to when, people dealing with Lyme. It's not only just the Lyme in itself. It's the all the emotional baggage around it that makes it more active, By like what you've been doing, by working on all that extra, all that additional stuff, that makes it so much easier than to, it's never easy, but it's make it more possible to get over, the symptoms of Lyme.
Definitely. One thing I like to say to my clients a lot is that it's not easy. It honestly was the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. It made Marine Corps boot camp look like a walk in the park. It was the hardest thing. But I look back, it was so simple. But I've had a background in fitness and health for quite some time. My first bench set and heavy bag was when I was in fifth grade, sixth grade. I buy magazines and read that. So I've been studying health and wellness and martial arts for all my life. And it's just funny how everything seemed to kind of piece together and work together during this journey. And I was able to lean back on this and lean back on that and readjust this and readjust that and take a homeopathic and natural route for this.
I've got it back up just a few seconds ago. So I want everyone to hear this. Did you just say this Lyme journey was tougher than the Marine boot camp? did I hear that correctly? And I totally believe you, but I just want people to hear this.
Oh, it was easy. It was, you know, it was so much harder than stepping in a cage, you know, that used to get locked behind me that I never even thought about until somebody brought that up to me recently. Like, you're okay with them locking the cage behind. I'm like, I never thought of it that way. I just thought that was for my safety. I never thought I couldn't get out of there, but oh yes, it's the whole journey of the addict. You know what? What I realized, so much of it was my mind. My mindset, I just made everything so much more miserable than, because of my self-hatred, the lack of love that I had to myself and anybody else, I just had so much regret and anger and resentment and fear and rage and just so much more, because my dad committed suicide and my mom not you know, emotionally, you know, able to be there, even though she was an absolute amazing person and did the absolute best that she could. I just don't think she had the tools to handle, especially she's the one who found my dad after he committed suicide. So it's, yes, the journey, oh gosh, it's, you know, not only the hardest thing, but the most beautiful thing.
And I mean, and here you are, you know, young, you're 6 years old, and now you have to, I mean, knowing what your mom has gone through, and obviously you've gone through, so now you got to step up and be the man and be the savior and help to carry that load.
That was exact, you know, and I, again, didn't realize that probably to this about a year ago, year and a half ago. I took on that role, and I lived with five other women. It was my mom, my aunt, my cousin, my, you know, for most of my upbringing. Before that, we moved around quite a bit, you know, about three or four times. Then we settled in when I was in fifth grade with my aunt, and I kept trying to be the man. That's what I thought I had to be. So that's why I got the weight set and the heavy bag and started doing martial arts and football, and then got into wrestling. And I remember just being so scared all the time. I remember peeking out my window thinking somebody, I lived in a real safe, small little town in New Jersey, and there was no crime. But I'd also watch all these horror movies and action movies. So I had all this story in my head, and I always thought I had to be the protector, and nobody ever told me to. So I stepped up and nobody wanted me to, though, especially since I didn't know how, but I never had a father figure in my life. I had two uncles that tried their best, but they had families themselves. They were both cops, which is why I think I gravitated towards that field. And I'd see them two, three, maybe four times a year. But yeah, that not having a father figure in my life really kind of handicapped me a bit.
And what kind of profession did your dad have?
He was a mechanic, and he was also Navy. So I went in the Marine Corps, which is a department of the Navy. I had so much hatred towards him. He's where I directed all my hatred till about, I think I was about 34 when I finally out loud said, forgive him.
You were cutting out a little bit during that time. Do you mind just kind of repeating that? Because it is so important.
Sorry. So I was just saying, he was an airplane mechanic, and then he was in the Navy. And I just had so much anger towards him. I wanted nothing to do with any of that. That's why I joined the Marine Corps, because I thought it was the toughest. And I just had so much anger and hatred towards him for leaving me. I felt like every, you know, I would go out of my way to let anybody know that anybody that committed suicide was a coward. And I had all these just things in my head about anybody that committed suicide. But I just didn't understand. So it was probably until I was 34 years old when I actually forgave him and spoke out loud that I forgave him, which, you know, really helped me with a lot of healing, other stuff, but still took many, many more years after that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I bet that was a big, big weight off of you to be able to forgive him. And you know, I thought that too before my Lyme journey, that unfortunately I've had several friends that have taken their own lives, And I always thought that such a coward way to go out. Like, just how can you do that to these other people? But then during my journey, when I contemplated taking my own life, it was not an easy thing to do. So they really weren't a coward, you know? It just is really kind of where your mind is. And the line was in my brain, and I was not thinking clearly, which a lot of us don't. So I'm sure that was a huge turning point for you, probably, to be able to forgive him.
It was. It really was. Gosh, it's just, again, like I said, just so much anger towards him. And I just felt I couldn't relate. But nobody ever tried to. I guess I never asked questions. But, you know, to touch on one thing the doctor asked about earlier with the Lyme and feeding to my dad, I was taking about 35 Norcos a day. And I really think that masked any symptoms that I had from other stuff, you know, such as possibly Lyme and other things like that. But again, I was taking that because of this anger and fear and resentment. And that's what, again, that's also helped me on the journey to, you know, once I forgave him, because I was still in that, my addiction mindset and addicted as well to pills and other things when I did forgive my dad. And again, I still had a long ways to go, but that was definitely a huge step.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, when we get to our lowest point, we recognize the challenge of other people that we may hold resentments to, and realize that, you know, it may not have been easy for them, and it may not have been an easy choice, like Tanya was saying, and that's a huge step. I mean, that's a huge step. I mean, what made you realize that was important, that you needed to do that? And also, how were you able to do it? I mean, because it's not just, you know, here you sit one day, I forgive you. You know, it's not that. You know, it's a whole lot more than that.
Well, the other thing I didn't finish with, and I kind of forgot, was it still took me years to forgive myself after that. So yes, I forgave my dad when I was, like I said, mid-30s, but it took me probably maybe 4, 5, 6 more years till I forgave myself. But I remember my boss who I actually just ran into recently after not seeing him for 8 or 9 years. I had a very traumatic relationship with him, just a lot of bad energy and it was all me. I just, the energy that I was pushing out because of my anger and hatred, he brought it up to me and he really helped me talk about that. My mom would talk about it a little bit, and I'm sure a couple other people here, but when my boss was talking to me about his journey with his dad and opened up to me about that, that helped me a lot. At first it just didn't click. And he kept saying it. And I'm sure people have been telling me it for years, and I just blocked it out left and right. I just, again, so much anger, and I had this tunnel vision towards hatred of him.
So what made it click? I mean, what did you do? I mean, was it just kind of in your heart, you know, Dad, I forgive you? What was that moment?
Gosh, there was a couple moments. One moment I remember, I was in New York right after this conversation with my boss, and I'd got sent to New York to work the UN conference out there with my dog, and that was about an hour away from where my dad was buried. And I remember driving around and having, you know, trying to talk to him out loud, and then thinking about going out there to see his burial plot, which I've never seen. No, I've never seen, because I went to the wake and I never went to the funeral or anything else. My mom chose, you know, not to do that. And I finally spoke out loud. I don't know. But once I spoke out loud, that's when it clicked. That's when I think I'd been trying to a little bit before here and there. And oh, I take that back. This was a huge part. Thank you. What my ex-wife was withholding my oldest from me, or so I thought at the time. But my middle son, excuse me, Jacob, he was just having some issues with the divorce and some issues with me, and she was just trying to protect him, and she was doing the best that she could. And I remember it was just devastating. He was my best friend, my buddy, and I remember being at dinner with my sister and just breaking down crying. And I remember not being able to stop crying. We had to get our food to go, and that's where it really clicked how much pain my father must have been in for him to have done that. And that still never really clicked until I got to that point where I was thinking about killing myself on a regular, or dying on a regular basis. To imagine being able to lift a gun up, put it to your head, and pull the trigger, because I know how much pressure it takes to pull that trigger. And even when I was at the range shooting targets, it's still, especially that first trigger pull, it's, you know, you have to pull pretty hard at first. And so that, just when I think about that, how much pain he must have been in to be able to pull that trigger. Just, wow.
Yeah.
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a light. I mean, that's, yeah.
I'm not speechless often, but, yeah. But wow.
Yeah.
Wow. And that is, I mean, such a great analogy of breaking down, you know, the actual strength you need in your mind and your finger to pull a trigger like that, and to be able to recognize the pain that he must have been in is.
And if it wasn't for me having that pain and getting to my rock bottom, I don't think I would have been able to.
No. And another thing, I mean, one of the therapies that exists out there is called family constellation, you know, where you kind of heal generational lines, you know, because, you know, energy flows, you know, through the generations. And oh, yes. So a lot of times, you know, when you have somebody that commits suicide or somebody dies early, or they're, you know, then there's a breakage, so to say, in that energy flow through, you know, from father to son or mother, daughter, or, you know, whichever flow that is. And so by healing that generational line, by forgiving him, that opens up that flow to you so that you can start to heal.
Yeah. And that's interesting to say that. I recently just found out that that my grandfather committed suicide as well. I don't have any, you know, my aunts that are alive don't really want to talk about any of that. And so I talked to an aunt that was not blood, but she lived nearby, and she just mentioned that either which way, whether it was suicide or just something very traumatic, because she said she'd heard them arguing the day before, my grandfather and aunt. This was before I was born, and then the next day she found out that he passed away. And my mom never talked to me about my grandfather. I don't really, you know, my grandmother passed away a year after my dad did. She never talked about him either. I don't remember. So I believe that. And so I kind of feel like my dad didn't have the chance to, in a sense, bleed on me from all of his wounds that he had. And that generational trauma, that's exactly been my goal for probably the last 2 years, is healing that. And especially all my childhood traumas that I didn't realize that I had, where I didn't feel loved, where I didn't feel worthy, where I didn't feel heard, and things that I could never realize back then until I got rid of all these chemicals that were in my body and chemicals in my life. Well, or I guess better yet, maybe I healed the chemicals in my body and got rid of all the excessive ones.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's a fascinating, and the radio show that I used to have, interviewed a gentleman called Dr. Mark Wollin. That's Wollynn. He's a kind of leader in this field in regards to healing generational traumas. So yeah, if you'd be interested to listen to that, you can just go on my website and just type in his last name and have the interview there. But it's such a important tool that a lot of people don't recognize, that sometimes the struggles we have, you know, may not be, you know, due to what's going on, you know, in this life. It may be, you know, the traumas we in a way inherit, because they've done like studies. You had, you know, people, you know, the people who were in concentration camps during World War II. And then all of a sudden you see three generations later, you have these people that are extremely anxious, panic attacks, you know, their lives are perfect. There is nothing wrong with them, but, you know, they are feeling, they're behaving as if they were in a concentration camp. They were feeling as if they were. So it's just seeing, even though it's not genetically passed, but the trauma in itself can be passed. And so that's why it's so important to kind of look at that, you know, and in combination with, you know, the chemicals and the pathogens. Because I think a lot of times you almost, in order to be able to hold that energy, that kind of that trauma, you invite in different chemicals and heavy metals and pathogens to kind of support that and that feeling of that you're wanting to hold, because it takes a lot of energy. You know, like you said, it takes a lot of energy to pull that gun. You know, it takes a lot of energy to hold that trauma. So then it's almost like you call upon, you know, the assistance of these different pathogens.
Definitely. Wow. And it's funny, I didn't believe in any of that stuff. I didn't really believe that genetics and, you know, because I also just didn't understand it in that way until I started breaking things down. I've listened to Dr. Gaber Mate a lot, and you know, or Mott, I forget how you pronounce his name, but he talks a lot about that, about his family being in concentration camps, him moving to Hungary, and then I, you know, just read and looked into so many different studies about monkeys and other things where they're doing things that they were never taught to do, but just because of the hereditary and their genetics and their DNA, everybody else have been and just subconsciously are doing it as well.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. So you did that, and then how were you able to forgive yourself?
That probably didn't happen until maybe about a year ago. Right when I was in that rehab in New York, where I got diagnosed with the Lyme, as I was trying to heal from my addiction and homelessness and things of that nature, I started intermittent fasting. I started changing my diet, going to more whole food, organic. Doing a lot of things, just everything I could, homeopathic, to help the healing. Cold exposure, sauna, red light therapy. I just tried everything I could, and whatever, you know, stuck. And I've kind of kept doing, you know, getting sun, being in nature, grounding, exercising, meditation, and things, you know, prayer and things of that nature. And slowly but surely, I felt, you know, my body started healing. My symptoms started going away. And then my mom passed away about 2 years ago, and I thought I was doing much better. And then when she passed, that really put me into a backspin. I had moved up to Orange County, was making a lot of money, triple the amount I'd ever made before in my life. And I kind of got back into drugs and back into a scene that I'd never seen before, and was partying and doing that. And that was up until about a year ago. Towards the end of that journey, I was finally spending a lot of time by myself, dissecting all these things that happened to me, kind of taking a step outside of my body and looking at why this happened, why that happened, and just started trying to love myself, and simply by telling myself I love me. And I realized I'd never done that before. I'd never been, I take that back. I'm sure I had been told to, but I didn't hear it. And so I just started doing stuff and put myself first. And I felt like that was a selfish thing to do. And I created a program, you know, thing I was doing, which was, again, self-care, and started out with just one or two things, me going outside and get some fresh air and things of that nature. And then from there, you know, like marijuana was a huge part of my healing journey as well. And that helped me with breath work. And I'd go outside and take some deep breaths, get some fresh air, sun, start exercise, start stretching, started doing. And then little by little, I started doing more and more stuff. And next thing I know, I have 20, 30, 40 things in my self-care routine that I was doing every day without even knowing it. And then I was like, wait, okay, this worked, this one didn't work. And then again, I was able to dissect all these things because I'd also, again, lost almost every, I'd lost everything I owned. I still really didn't ha I haven't had my own place where I've been on the lease or anything of that sort probably for about 5 years. And I've now embraced it. I live out of my car in Carlsbad. I get the best sleep I've ever had in my life. I found peace. Every day is the same for me. Before it, I felt like my body told me what I was doing. My body told me when I was tired. My body told me when I was thirsty, when I was hungry, when I was in pain, when I could sleep, when I couldn't sleep. And probably for the last 6 or 8 months, I feel like I took control back. And now I sleep for 5 hours. I wake up in the most just amazing state. I've been walking 5, 6 miles a day the last couple of days because my car broke down, the one I'm living in. But I embraced it. It was just another journey, another beautiful thing. And the old me, that would have been another rock bottom, another problem, another. And now it's just, beautiful.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
Wow. Like I have so much. My mind is spinning. But I do want to bring this up because I think it's important for the listeners to hear. So a little bit ago when we had asked you, how you forgave your father, and you had mentioned that you started talking to yourself out loud. And then we asked you how you forgave yourself, and you started telling yourself out loud that you love yourself. I think that it's so important that when we're going through this journey, that we really believe that we are what we say and we are what we speak. And that kind of goes along with your mindset and your healing journey. But I think that you need to tell yourself that you'd love yourself for one, but that you can beat this and you can get through this journey. And I believe wholeheartedly that every journey that we go through, there's a learning reason for it and a reason that we go through it. And just know that, just kind of embrace the process of it. Yeah, it sucks. I mean, it's really bad. but just try to keep that positive mindset to where that this is a journey. It's not the end of your journey. It's the middle of the road for you, and figure out a way to get on the other side of it, because I know firsthand, and just hearing your journey, I know that the other side can be just incredible. So I just wanted to say that.
Oh yes. The self-love aspect was huge. And speaking out loud, I guess I didn't really realize that, how that clicked. So thank you for that. The other thing I started doing probably about 2 months ago is started loving everybody else. I wrote some I love you letters to my ex-wife, to her husband that has raised my kids for the last, 3 years, to my son Anthony, who I haven't met since he was 6 months old, to his mom, his dad as well, and thanking both of them for raising my children when I wasn't able to, when I wasn't, and I would have just bled all over them. And it's just amazing how beautiful life is. I sent I love yous to a bunch of other people that I had a lot of anger and regret because I tried to do, the AA thing and reach out, and I'm not saying anything bad about AA. AA is absolutely wonderful, but I tried to reach out to people and tell them I'm sorry and be accountable for my actions. And my sister helped me realize, she's like, there's a lot of people that might not be ready for that. Like, I was trying to do that with my mom a lot when she was battling cancer. And my sister would be like, quiet, tell me to shut up. And I'm like, what? I'm just telling my story. I was telling my mom about how I was stealing this and that. And because I was trying to unleash all this guilt. And my sister's like, she doesn't need to hear that. And I pushed that on my ex-wife as well and pushed that on other people. And I never really thought about how they, if they were ready to hear that, if they were ready to for that journey. And so I took me a long while to figure that out. And so I just realized, just love people and tell them I love them, and just pour that outward. And I've had some amazing responses from some of the people. Some people haven't responded back, and that's perfectly fine. But just Some of the people that I had a lot of resentment that I hadn't talked to in years, they reached out, and other people didn't. But I did it for, I wanted them to know that they were loved. And I think, that's one of my biggest goals now is working with the homeless communities, just trying to get them to understand that they're loved.
Yeah.
And they are. I mean, everybody on this earth is, they're so important, and they're so important to so many others. And sometimes they need to be reminded of that, that they are loved, and life happens. And, a lot of families aren't always all happy families. there's a lot of, I've learned that over the years, how truly, truly blessed I am to have the family that I have. I mean, if it was up to me, I would live in the same block, the same neighborhood of every single family member of mine. And I have a huge family. And I can honestly say that. Like, I love them more than I could imagine. And so it breaks my heart to know there are so many dysfunctional families out there, that don't love each other. So I love that you love everyone and that you're sharing it with them.
I feel since this journey, I feel like I have this power. When I look at somebody, I can now see them, the trauma. I start seeing their coping mechanisms. And the more coping mechanisms I see, the more trauma I believe they have, because I remember all the coping mechanisms I had / addictions. From pills, from food, from codependencies, from caffeine. And it was just stacked. I was just reading about dopamine stacking, and it was to the umpteenth degree. And you around and see vaping and on their phone, eating, talking to somebody, doing four things that release that dopamine instantly rather than the delayed gratification. Everybody wants that instant gratification. That was me forever. And I have to remind myself that story with everybody. I am relate with people and realize that they were going through the same things I was, or different or worse. And I believe our mind is one of the biggest problems that causes all this, the guilt, the shame, the regret, the anger, the fear, and it used to drive the voices in my head just wouldn't ever be quiet. And so I just took more pills, more caffeine, more, squeeze my kids as tight as I can and TV and movies. And it's funny because almost besides my kids, none of those things relate to me anymore. Or resonate.
Yeah, and that's the thing a lot of people do, and they create scenarios. They create scenarios where they're able then to hold the anger, the feeling of anger or of guilt or shame or whatever it is that then triggers that stress response that creates that dopamine release. And in addition to obviously, I'm talking about addiction to sex, addiction to drugs, addiction to just watching, being screen time, the blue light, that continually helps to trigger the dopamine.
Yeah.
So all these different things, the dopamine is your reward system, your brain lights up and, I feel happy, I feel excited about life. And the problem is that when you keep, like you're saying, doing dopamine stacking, the body will then start to break down the receptors for these dopamines because it gets flooded and it can't handle that amount. So it starts to break down the receptors. So now you need more and more and more. And then you keep looking for more stimulation and then you can end up in situations that you really shouldn't be in.
Without a doubt. Yes, you said that perfectly. And I think I was talking about it earlier before we started the podcast. I would try almost any, I never did anything intravenous, not that that makes me any better than anybody else. I used to use that as my scapegoat, but there was so many things I would try. If I was out of my Norcos, I would use gabapentin, Robitussin, just anything, I should have like 3 or 4 PhDs on how to get high, because I would spend so much time on web and all these things on how do I can this and that, and what if I take this and what if I pull that out, and that's it. It was just so much anger and again the noises, and so yeah, I was stacking dopamine left and right with everything. And that's the exact opposite I do now. I jump in the ocean, I do cold plunges, saunas, working out, journaling, and none of them, well, now they give me in a sense immediate pleasure because I know what's going to come after. I know the resilience that it's going to build, the strength that it's going to build. And that's what I look forward to. I jumped in the ocean this morning and I remember it was cold outside. It was probably 50 degrees out. The ocean's probably a little bit warmer than that, but you know, the waves are crashing. So it's pretty cold. And I didn't want to. I was there with a client. I don't think she wanted to either. And we both jumped in and I'm in there and it's just wonderful in there. And you know, it just, and the reason why I forced myself in there is because I know all the wonderful and beautiful things that will come from it after the fact. It might not be, you know, late, because then it took me almost an hour to warm up after that. My body was kind of shaking for the next 20 minutes. I tried my hardest not to get in a warm shower, towel off, and allow my body to warm myself naturally. And again, I'm sitting there, oh, I shouldn't have done that. I had an appointment to be someplace, but I'm like, no, I know it's going to make the rest of my day just so much easier and simpler.
Yeah, and that's, I'm glad you said that, relating to, you know, jumping in the ocean and you really didn't want to, but you knew it would be amazing afterwards. So those people that are going through this treatment journey, you know, when we are killing too much, you know, we can have that Herxheimer reaction, which just makes life seem miserable. Just know that there's a goal at the end of that. Once you get past that, it's going to be so much more amazing. You just have to keep pushing through it. And then the part about getting the natural dopamine, well, the best part about it is, one, it's the best way to get it. But two, you can actually, you're not high, so you can remember how amazing it was.
Yeah.
And I love that you're focusing on the homeless community and how much better to have somebody like you to relate to what they're going through, and so that they don't feel isolated, that their story is the only story, but that they can recognize that here's somebody that's been where I'm at, and sometimes even worse than I'm at, and there's a solution. You know, he went through this. And so I love that you are giving back to that community, because there's, you know, like you, it's you, all of a sudden you are there and you have no idea how you got there. And then to unravel that and then kind of get back on your feet. And I know, you know, when I lived in, you know, Venice Beach, I mean, there's just some people, the only thing that stopped them from not being homeless was that they needed an address. You know, they could not apply for a job without an address. You know, yeah. So it's just these simple things, you know, that, so I love that you're there for them.
I love that you said unravel, because that's what I feel like I've been doing for the last, couple of years, just unraveling my life. And as I've cleared all these things out, I've removed material things, food, even water. I've done some complete dry fasts, fast from sex and all kinds of other things. And the clarity that I've come from that is allowed me to unravel all these things. And it's made me realize that any single person can just as easy be there. When I was working in Orange County, all of my friends and acquaintances and people we're working with, we're all making six, seven, eight, you know, figures, making a lot of money. And when I came down here and started working in the homeless community, I realized they were in the exact same situation, except for they had money and they didn't. They were all miserable. They're constantly chasing the next million, the newer Rolex, the iPhone 17, the newer Mercedes. And what I realized is there was just never an end. It was the newest restaurant that came out. And the next thing I know, I fell into that as well. I was making a lot of money. I was started playing poker and gambling a lot, and just, you know, kind of going crazy with this and following what they were doing, dropping $200 on a dinner. Heck, three of us dropped $700 on a dinner once. The most I'd ever paid before was probably like $85 at Chili's. And now I'm going to these restaurants in Orange County, $700, $800, and barely even blinking.
Yeah.
And again, I look back and that was a beautiful journey as well. But I again realized that they were the only thing that was keeping them up there was that money.
And their biggest addiction was usually work and chasing that money. There was no happiness. There was no happiness at all.
No.
There was no peace for them.
No. Well, I'm so glad that you have gone through this rough journey and made it out on this other side, because I'll tell you what, this, your journey is, does not only show how strong of a human you are, but talk about resilience and talk about a story of hope. Like, wow. I don't even know what to say. And honestly, I really am never speechless. It just has been such an incredible story you shared with us. And so I really hope that those listeners out there that really needed a good story of hope got to listen to this today, because it definitely was just incredible. I'm so, so proud of you. I love the road that you're on. Again, you know, Lyme connected us. So it just, it's not all bad. It is what we make of it. So gosh, Rich, thank you so much for sharing your journey. It's been a true pleasure.
Oh, it's been my honor. And I'd like to just share one more thing if it's okay.
Yes.
If I can do it, anybody else can. I know that for a fact. I'm not special. At the same time, I know I am special, but everybody's special. We're all special. We're all loved. We need to love each other. And again, I remember I was 305 pounds living in a Motel 6s or other motels, stuffed my face with food, lost custody of my kids. Just, I didn't think there was any way out. I couldn't do one push-up. My entire identity was based on how strong I was, and tying my shoe would exhaust me. And I didn't think there was any way out. And so again, I've lost about 115 pounds and almost every symptom that I had 3 or 4 years ago, which is a very long list, is all but gone. And again, if I can do it, I know we all can.
You can't, they can, they absolutely can. We feel so many days that we can't get through this. There's no way, but you had every possible thing stacked against you. And you did it. So they absolutely can do it.
And I will say, I couldn't have done it without everybody in my life. You know, the mentors that I had that I didn't realize, the family that I had supporting me that I didn't realize, the people around me that just I interacted with for 2 minutes that made such a big difference, just, you know, being heard and seen. There's no way I could have done this on my own. And I used to think I did it. Oh, I did it on my own. The podcast that I listened to, Joe Rogan, was huge for me. Joe Rogan, you know, introducing me to so many other people, Jordan Peterson, Sad Guru, and Jay Shetty, and Andrew Huberman, and Lewis Howes, and I could go on for days, you know, Wim Hof, all that opened my eyes to so many different things, and the people I've met through that, you know, such as yourself, and this journey just is, honestly, you know, again, just absolutely beautiful. And you know, I still don't have custody of my kids. I haven't seen them in 2.5 years. I talk to them, you know, every other week, every 2 or 3 weeks. So there's still a lot in my life that I haven't gotten back, but I know it will work out. I know it will happen. I believe that I will have a relationship with my ex-wife again, her husband, and my kids, and other people. I don't know what kind of relationship. I don't know when, I don't know how, I don't know where. But I stopped trying to white knuckle everything and just be here, be present, and enjoy life right now.
Yes, I like that. Be here, be present. And I believe that it will all work out when the time is right, you know. And if you just let it be, that's usually when things work out. And I have no doubt that everything that you're missing from your life right now, you absolutely will get it back, because you're tough. You're a fighter. You've got this. Wow. Okay. Now you're going to make me cry. just incredible journey. Thank you again so much for sharing. You've been so vulnerable, and it's really going to make a huge impact to those listeners out there. So we appreciate you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate this invite and this opportunity. This has been amazing as well.
Absolutely.
The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only and is not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review, and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com, and an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld.